No US election is routine, but some are more dramatic than others. And 2008 was truly epic, full of sound and fury, signifying everything. As we shall see, the candidates personified some of the great themes of America's past. The victor transformed the nature of campaigning and broke the biggest taboo of US politics. But he entered the White House amid the gravest crisis of capitalism for 75 years. The Republican candidate, Senator John McCain, was the son and grandson of US admirals and himself a Vietnam veteran. Badly wounded, he spent more than 5 years as a prisoner of war, often beaten and tortured. Yet this experience deepened his faith in his country and its values.
We should never let this one mistake, terrible though it was, color our perceptions forever of our country's purpose. We were a good country before Vietnam, and a good country after Vietnam. In all of history, you cannot find a better one.
Here was a man who embodied the imperial tradition of modern America, of military service for country and cause in a global Cold War. McCain's running mate was completely different, indeed completely unlikely. Sarah Palin, the former beauty queen turned governor of Alaska. Palin was a mother of five, a self-styled Bible-believing Christian, passionate about moose hunting and a lifelong member of the pro-gun National Rifle Association. She told the Republican Party convention,
"I had the privilege of living most of my life in a small town. I was just your average hockey mom and signed up for the PTA.
Here were heartland American values, evangelical and libertarian, yet expressed with feminine bite.
Those hockey moms, you know, they say the difference between a hockey mom and a pit bull? Lipstick.
Palin became an overnight sensation. She spoke to and for millions of conservative Americans, energized by the culture wars of the 80s and 90s against the onward march of secularism and big government. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton stood for a different kind of liberty. Her roots lay in the feminism of the 70s, as an educated professional woman seeking to carve out her own life as a lawyer. Hillary Clinton became a symbol of assertive feminism, which her high-profile role in Bill's White House seemed to confirm. This was a very different tradition of liberty from Sarah Palin, intellectual women's lib, not down-home libertarian. But 2008 was not to be Hillary's payback for years of standing by her man. Her rival in the Democratic primaries was Barack Obama, aged 46. He was nearly 14 years younger, making her seem like a dated member of the baby boom generation. Obama was African-American, but of a most exotic sort. The son of a black man from Kenya and a white woman from Kansas, raised in Hawaii and Indonesia, and trained at Harvard Law School before settling down in Chicago. As he said in March 2008,
I have brothers, sisters, nieces, nephews, uncles, and cousins of every race and every hue scattered across three continents. And for as long as I live, I will never forget that in no other country on earth is my story even possible. It's a story that hasn't made me the most conventional of candidates. But it is a story that has seared into my genetic makeup the idea that this nation is more than the sum of its parts. That out of many, we are truly one.
Obama's variegated ethnic background embodied the multicultural nation that America is becoming. The U.S. Census Bureau currently projects that whites, two-thirds of the population in 2008, will constitute well under half the total by 2050, outnumbered by Hispanics, blacks, Asians, and other non-white groups. Except that by then, the great divide between white and non-white that has colour-coded US history to date will have become meaningless because of intermixing. One demographer declared,
Obama is 2050. multiracial, multiethnic.
Let us break bread together on our knees.
And it was this mixed background that also made Obama fundamentally different from earlier generations of black activists who were the descendants of slaves. Men such as Jesse Jackson, one of Martin Luther King's aides, who had bid for the Democratic nomination in the 80s. They still railed against the racism of white America, whereas Obama's strategy was more inclusive.
Working together, we can move beyond some of our old racial wounds. For the African American community, that path means embracing the burdens of our past without becoming victims of our past.
Let us drink wine together.
It means continuing to insist on a full measure of justice in every aspect of American life. But it also means binding our particular grievances for better health care and better schools and better jobs to the larger aspirations of all Americans. The white woman struggling to break the glass ceiling, the white man who's been laid off, the immigrant trying to feed his family.
Obama's inclusiveness was one reason why he ended up victorious. He was more successful at reaching out to all Americans, whereas McCain, Palin, and Clinton, the martial patriot, the cultural conservative, and the feminist intellectual, all proved much narrower in their appeal. But his victory was also thanks to pathbreaking use of the internet, capitalizing on the IT revolution that, as we've seen, had been transforming American life since the 80s. His campaign created its own social networking site with the help of Chris Hughes, co-founder of Facebook. This attracted more than 1.5 million members. And Obama raised a record $600 million from over 3 million people, many of them donating online. One of the managers of Bill Clinton's election victory back in 1992 spoke admiringly of what Obama had done.
He's reinvented the way campaigns are run. Compared to our 92 campaign, this is like a multinational corporation versus a non-profit organization.
A telling tribute, except that by November 2008, the whole US economy looked like a non-profit organization, mired in its worst crisis for three quarters of a century. The most visible culprits were irresponsible bankers, deregulated, as we've seen in the 90s, and freed to build up complex financial empires with little scrutiny. Bankers lent to all and sundry on minimal security, building up the notorious toxic assets, especially mortgages, that eventually poisoned the whole system. But profligate bankers were symptomatic of a deeper problem, rooted in the habits of ordinary Americans. For most of the 20th century, since the days of tycoons like Andrew Carnegie, the US had been the world's greatest manufacturer, exporting goods to the world at large, and also capital, through multinational corporations and also aid programs like the Marshall Plan, which helped revive Western Europe's economy after 1945. But the Reagan era, with its supply-side economics, the mirage of spending without paying, set Americans on a very different course. To quote journalist Fareed Zakaria,
"If we wanted a bigger house, a better TV or a faster car, and we didn't actually have the money to pay for it, no problem. We put it on a credit card and took out a massive mortgage and financed our fantasies. As the fantasies grew, so did household debt, from $680 billion in 1974 to $14 trillion today. The average household owns 13 credit cards."
And since Americans weren't saving, the money had to come from the rest of the world, particularly the Middle East and the boom economies of India and China. Their continued readiness to invest in America funded the country's rake's progress, not just at home, but also abroad. Yes, the US was indeed a great global empire, but now an empire of consumption, not an empire of production. The global crash of 2008 raised the question of whether such an empire could endure.
Thank you.
But little of this registered with the millions watching on January the 20th, 2009, when Barack Obama took the oath of office. He could have made a triumphalist declaration as the first black president of the United States. He might have spoken, like John Kennedy, about the torch having been passed to a new kind of American. But Obama, the apostle of inclusiveness, hadn't come to gloat. In any case, he didn't need to. Simply standing behind a podium bearing the seal of the President of the United States was quite enough. The man was the message. Whatever is the fate of Obama and his presidency, on January the 20th, 2009, he had already booked his place in history. And that day is a good moment to draw this account of America's saga to its close. Thomas Jefferson had envisioned the United States as a mighty empire of liberty, but it went on to exceed even his grandiose dreams, first expanding across the American continent from sea to shining sea, and then weaving a web of military, economic, and cultural influence that girdled the globe. In the process, the US drew in millions of immigrants, attracted by freedom and opportunity unmatched in Europe, Asia, or South America. Yet Jefferson's new nation, conceived in liberty, had also been born in original sin. That sin of slavery was eventually expunged with the blood of civil war, but it left a legacy of racial discrimination to stain American society for another century and more. Enter Obama the Redeemer, the first black president in US history. Like all his predecessors, Obama has no doubt that America has a special, providential future. But coming to power amid a global economic crisis, he acknowledged the challenges, the imponderables. Hence his striking line.
God calls on us to shape an uncertain destiny.
The global Obamania of the inauguration reminds us of a larger truth. The United States is always in the headlines, flaunting its virtues and its vices, arousing fervent admiration and visceral hatred. In this series, I have offered a broader perspective by setting the present in the light of the past. It's not a simple story, but one full of paradoxes. The global empire forged by ardent anti-imperialists. The land of liberty rooted in human bondage. The secular state driven by godly ambition. It's a history that's often messy and sometimes appalling, yet also frequently epic and on occasions wonderfully uplifting. Above all, it's a history that really matters if we want to understand our modern world and its uncertain destiny.